When you are, you know, again, context of relationships or a job, you are in a job that you are not enjoying or a relationship that is toxic to you, your ability to adapt to that external stimulus is going to really determine your longevity, your neuroplasticity over the course of your life.
This is the Entrepology Podcast, the podcast where we optimize the bodies, brains, and lifestyles of entrepreneurs, go-getters, and world-changing innovators.
Welcome to the Entrepology Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Megan Walker. As an anthropologist and naturopathic doctor, I optimize the health and performance of badass women working to change the world as entrepreneurs and go-getters, people kind of like you. Before we jump into the interview, I want to invite you to join our free Facebook community, Legacy. If you want to be something amazing, you need to surround yourself with amazing people. The Legacy community is made up of badass women living, not leaving, but living our legacy every single day. We are leaders, parents, entrepreneurs, and innovators collectively committed to leaving the world better than we found it. My mission is to support the health and optimization of these badass superheroes, literally to places we never thought imaginable. If you are on a mission and get it that your health is the key to your unlimited potential, then join us. We are super awesome. You can find us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/groups/BE Legacy. See you there. So I read this study this week, and it was published in a book by Amy Cuddy called Presence. And she talked about this idea that if you stand with your feet apart and your hands on your hips, kind of like the superwoman stance, you're able to increase your levels of testosterone and decrease your levels of cortisol within 2 minutes of assuming this pose. This is this beautiful example of taking the body to start to control your hormones and your neurotransmitters and basically your physiological state simply by how you are moving your physical being. What it means is you have control over what's going on in your body. Today, I sat down with Dr. Stephanie Estima. She is a chiropractor, coach, and curator and builder of superhumans. The whole conversation centered around behaviors and changes that we can make that change our neurochemistry, that literally change our brain to turn us into superhumans. We talked about the differences between men and women, the kinds of behaviors that we can engage in that either make us better partners or worse partners, because our actions have a direct impact on what happens to the neurochemistry of the people that we love most. We got into morning routines, gratitude spreadsheets, and other really cool hacks on how to live an amazing superhuman life and how to be in a superhuman relationship. Dr. Stephanie. Dr. Stephanie Estima, welcome to the Entrepology Podcast. It's such a pleasure to have you.
It is an honor to be here. Thank you, Dr. Megan.
So you are a chiropractor, a coach, an entrepreneur, and an expert in superhumans. And those are my words now that I've come to know you a little bit better. Can you take us through the journey that got us to this point?
Yeah, sure. I'd love to. My origin story, if you will, really started when I was a child, when I was a young girl. My mom was a fitness instructor herself, and she was obsessed with eating well. So she was the super hippie, super oddball mom at, all the birthdays. And, you know, my lunches were filled with broccoli and asparagus and tomatoes. And, you know, everybody else had like the, what were they called? The Twinkies and the Doritos and crap. So I was always very different. I watched my mom, like we would go to my mom's fitness classes and watch her, you know, teach fitness and, you know, learn new routines and do all that great stuff. And then, you know, that primed me for my own journey into fitness and nutrition. I too later became a fitness fanatic, and I taught fitness classes throughout university and chiropractic school. That's actually how I paid for the outrageous tuition that happens in chiro school. And so my love for, you know, nutrition and fitness started as a young girl. And then in university, I studied neuroscience and psychology. So my love for the brain and mindset was solidified through my early schooling. And while I was in university, I also thought that I wanted to be a pediatrician and I was going to do something in the medical field, but I was exposed to a principled chiropractor who, after sitting down with him, was, you know, showed me the story of chiropractic, the history of it, and how, you know, the profession came to be. And the original origin story of chiropractic is really just respecting the, what we call the innate intelligence or the life force, if you're a Star Wars fan, you know, of the brain and the body and the ability for the body to self-heal and self-regulate when you have the proper conditions in place. So I literally changed my career path in like 2 days after talking to him and became a chiropractor and really haven't looked back since. And I guess you could say my love for, you know, everything superhuman has really come from my own personal journey, things that I have wanted, like, you know, my own personal desires and dreams for my own physical fitness, nutrition, my brain health, my, and the vitality for my life. So those are things that I've, you know, kind of experienced on myself and, you know, a couple of willing guinea pigs in my social circle. And then I, you know, once I find that they work, I implement them into practice.
So what is a superhuman?
Such a good question. Have you seen the, you saw the documentary Finding Joe?
I did. Yeah.
Okay. So do you remember right in the beginning where they have this story of, you know, the Buddha, and then there was some, you know, neighboring terrorists or something, and they were coming in to, you know, ravage the town, and then they covered up the Buddha with, you know, rock and stone and all of that. I actually think that that's very similar to every single human being on the planet. I actually think that we are all born as superhumans. And, you know, we are born gifted. We are born with innate intelligence, with innate capacity for love and giving and growth. And, you know, as we are growing up, you know, we are told that we cannot, we should not, we must not, you know, from our, you know, mothers, fathers, teachers, preachers. And we, because we're young and we actually, you know, depend on those people in our community for our survival, you know, we make those agreements with ourselves. So if someone says, you know, you're a good girl, Megan, or you are a bad girl, Stephanie, or, you know, whatever the case may be, you internalize those agreements with yourself. And then you seek out, as we become adults, you seek out to engage in behaviors that reinforce that belief structure. So I think what makes a superhuman is the ability to A, restore those, you know, I guess part of my job is to kind of restore the factory settings that we all have. If you can think about when you kind of crack open like a new shiny computer, you have these like the great, you know, factory settings. There's no viruses, there's no clogging up, there's no spinning wheel of death, you know, that you get with like older computers. That is really what I am after in my practice. And what I think a superhuman is really restoring that original golden Buddha or those original factory settings that we are all innately born with, and then building on them with certain principles of exercise, nutrition, brain health, and mindset.
And I would suspect that we're probably in agreement here that once we start to build out that superhuman, what makes it sustainable then is the relationships and the tribes that we build around ourselves to reinforce that. And this is an area that you're particularly passionate about. So is there such a thing as a superhuman relationship?
There absolutely is. Have you ever, like, one of the things I always ask people is, you know, have you ever been in like a, you know, a relationship or even like a work environment that, you know, you felt was toxic or didn't serve you? And, you know, I would say that like 100% of people would be like, yes, I've been in either a job that I hated or a relationship that wasn't serving me. And I think that when we are in those jobs that we hate or relationships that aren't completely aligned with us, this is where we, to sort of build on that Buddha analogy, we start to cover up our beauty, our, you know, our original golden Buddha with some of the stone and some of the, you know, cement that keeps us from really actualizing or self-actualizing and reaching our highest potential. So yes, superhuman relationships are possible, and they are possible if you are willing to do. I mean, I think that it's very easy to point the finger at your partner and say, well, you know, my partner doesn't pick up their socks and my partner doesn't cook me meals. And my, you know, but really having a superhuman relationship, there are a couple of really important things that make up a superhuman relationship. One is the willingness to do the hard work necessary to get you back to that golden Buddha. Two, I think that, you know, finding the ways that you are aligned with your partner. There's a really simple exercise that, I share this with his permission, that my partner, Giovanni, had done years before I'd met him. And he had basically written down all the things that he liked, some of the qualities that he liked or that he wanted in a partner before he was with anybody. And he wrote down, it was like a list of like 40 or 50 things. And when he met me, it was very easy for him to identify that this was the person that really was in alignment with some of his core values, you know, his mission, his vision, his purpose, et cetera. And I think that's a great, you know, whether you've been in a relationship for, you know, 50 years or, you know, 1 year or whatever the case may be, I think it's an awesome exercise for you to write out, you know, where you are aligned, or if, even if you're not in a relationship, you know, where is there alignment, or where do you want the alignment to be? And I think that that's a sort of a cornerstone of a really great superhuman relationship, is really understanding. I mean, this is a podcast about, you know, entrepreneurs. How many entrepreneurs have, you know, framed on their wall somewhere their mission, their vision, their purpose, their catalyzing statement, you know, the reason why the business exists? But so many times we don't actually even do that with our own intimate relationship. So this is a really great exercise in sort of defining the core values, the mission, the vision, the purpose of the relationship.
And so what do you do with those people? Because I know there's people listening and they're having this moment where they're like, shit, what if my list and my relationship that I'm in legally or lovingly or otherwise are not as congruent as I want? Like that's a level of awareness that's important. What's the next step from there? Because I think you can't forego the exercise for fear of the outcome. Mm-hmm. But how do we support those people? What's the next stage in that dialogue for those individuals?
I think that the point of the exercise is not to make sure that you're 100% congruent. Like, you don't want to be carbon copies of each other. You're allowed to be your own individual person with your own individual, you know, viewpoints and that sort of thing. But what this exercise affords is the ability to establish a baseline, and then you can start having the conversation around and building on the idea around where you are in alignment and how you can build that into your relationship and honor and cultivate more of that. And where you are not aligned, you know, defining boundaries around it. So it, for me, you know, this doesn't, like I said, that you don't have to be like 100% all in and exactly the same. That's never going to happen unless you're twins and you're, you know, that doesn't even, you know, make sense in the context of this discussion. But, you know, the point is to find where you are aligned and then start capitalizing on that, start building on that.
Right. And like anything, you know, if you're worried about how much money you are or not making, but just deal with that by never looking at your bank account, that's not helpful either.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, absolutely. So are there differences in terms of how each element of the relationship come together? Like, if we're talking about men and women in a relationship, are there things from a neurological, biological perspective that we need to honor or respect or know as we are evaluating congruence and synergy in a relationship? Or is that even relevant?
This is my favorite question ever. This is like my jam. I love this. Yes, of course, there are really huge differences between men and women. So we're gonna geek out a little bit. Is that okay?
Yes.
We're gonna geek out neurologically a little bit. Is that cool?
This is my favorite place to be. You go there.
All right. So we have, I mean, this is a bit simplified, but I think that everybody listening will take this as a really basic understanding, and it'll give you a bit more understanding about your partner as well. So short answer is abso-fucking-lutely, there are differences between a male brain and a female brain. Very simply, you know, we have two different sides of the brain, right? We have the left side of the brain and the right side of the brain. The left side of our brain, for both men and women, by the way, tends to be more analytical, you know, mechanistic, task-oriented, linear, strategic, that kind of thing. And it tends to be what we call the left side of the brain tends to be the what we call the male or the male dominant. Like, there tends to be more characteristics on the left side of the brain that we find in more males. That, of course, doesn't mean that women are not, you know, analytical and mathematical and task oriented and all and strategic. Of course they are, but this tends to be more of a male side brain. And then the right side tends to be more creative and emotional and sensual and passionate. And this is what is most, it's commonly referred to as the female brain. And of course, again, it's not to say that men can't be creative or sensual or passionate or emotional. Of course they can, but these are typically traits that we find in more females than we do in males. The left side of your brain, there's something called neurotransmitters in the brain. So it's basically a hormone that lives in the brain. On the left side, that male dominated, the mechanistic, linear, strategic, analytical side, there's a neurotransmitter called dopamine that lives there. And dopamine is a neurotransmitter that's involved in motivation. So when you are inspired about something, you're motivated about something, you know, you can raise your own levels internally, your own levels of dopamine, and that will continue to drive the, you know, if you ever seen like a guy that's like, they have like 1,000 things to do on their to-do list and they can just like bang them off, bang, 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 because they have high levels of dopamine, right? So they can go, they can like pummel through that task, to-do list. On the right side of the brain, there's something called serotonin. That's the neurotransmitter or the hormone of the brain that lives on the right side. And that is we've heard about serotonin like almost exhaustively at this point. It's like our happy hormone, that it's a neurotransmitter that's targeted in some of the brain altering, you know, when you're depressed or anxious, they will usually give you drugs that will help alter the levels of serotonin in the brain. And I think that this part, if you can get this part, this is kind of a game changer. So with dopamine on the left side of the brain, I can internally raise my own levels of dopamine. If I'm really excited about something, like talking about the brain, clearly, I can raise my own levels of dopamine. But with serotonin, I can't raise my levels of serotonin. You, Megan, have to raise my levels of serotonin. So serotonin is raised by positive feedback from our external environment. So from like our loved ones, our work environment, you know, people that we love to hang around, that kind of thing. And what happens when, Megan, you are asking me questions that is really getting me going about talking about the brain, then my serotonin levels increase and therefore drive my dopamine, therefore drive my motivator, my motivating hormone or my motivating neurotransmitter. So maybe an example to kind of put that in, if that's kind of like seeming a little bit too technical. I'm in private practice in Toronto. I get a lot of serotonin or positive feedback from my environment, from going into my practice every day, because I get lots of positive feedback because people are constantly telling me things like, you know, athletes are telling me I was able to reach a new PR at CrossFit this week, or, you know, dads are saying, you know, I was able to get on the floor and like rough and tumble with my kids. And, you know, women are saying they don't have any headaches anymore and that sort of thing. So I often say to myself, like, I fucking can't wait to get back into practice tomorrow where I can do this all over again and get that positive feedback again. And that serotonergic boost will drive up my dopamine, which is my motivator.
Which creates biochemical momentum.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes, exactly. Now, a flip side of that, when we're talking in the context of, you know, superhuman relationships or any type of intimate relationship, if I want to, let's say I want to, show my partner how much I love him and how much I care for him. So I spend the day looking up his favorite recipe. I'm looking up tiramisu and I'm trying to get, you know, and I'm cooking his favorite meal. And, you know, I get my hair did, my nails did, everything's did. I'm perfumed up, I'm, you know, makeup's on, I'm ready to go. And, you know, hubby comes home and he's in a bad mood. Some shit went down at work today. He's tired, you know, doesn't want to engage and just watch, you know, just wants to like sit down and watch, you know, the Leafs or something on television. What's going to happen to my dopamine levels, my happiness?
They're going to drop. Yeah.
They're going to drop. And then that in turn is also going to affect my motivation neurotransmitter, my dopamine, because the outcome that I'm expecting doesn't match my efforts.
Right.
Right. So over the course of time, you know, what does that happen? Like one time, you know, maybe you just kind of shrug it off, but what happens like the fifth time, the 10th time, the 100th time, you know, this kind of thing. So that's sort of the basic workings between, I would just say it, the basic workings between the left and the right brain. Now, how women and men are different, and this is really important, is women, even though we are more right-brained in nature, creative, central, emotional, passionate, we have half of the amount of serotonin receptors in our brains than our male counterparts do. Half.
Wow.
So what does that mean, you know, in terms of when we're that interplay between a man and a woman, is women, we need more positive feedback. In fact, we need double, right? Because we have half of the amount. So our male partners need to be giving us double the amount of positive feedback in order to get the same serotonergic burst, which drives that motivation, that dopamine neurotransmitter, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Most guys have no clue. Like, you know, most guys like, why is this bothering you? Just like kind of get over it or whatever. And that's really the wrong approach, because a woman needs more positive feedback from her intimate relationship, from her intimate partner along the way. Like, and it's not, I'm not saying that women are like super needy and codependent and all of that stuff, but we just need more positive feedback than our male partners think that we do.
Right. And, you know, I do, we're not allowed to do it the same way anymore, but I did a lot of genetic testing with my patients. And one of the things we look at is that propensity for serotonin receptors. So even within that group of women, we see this huge spectrum in terms of where people are at in terms of the number of serotonin receptors they have access to and their capacity to upregulate it.
Love it. Yeah.
And I want to point out too, because I think for a lot of people, and certainly for me, I'm sitting here going, oh, Of course. Like, and at the end of the day, this is all of these feelings, it's biochemistry. We've got this real life event that interacts with our physiology and our genetics, and then it turns into a cascade. But there's this behavior that individuals partake in, and men certainly do this as well. But I know a lot of women who do this, and this is you come home and you've had a crummy day, and maybe you're in a relationship, maybe you're not. Or maybe your scenario where you talked about, right? You put in all this effort, your partner comes home and they just like veg out on the couch. And our natural tendency is to turn to carbs because carbs upregulate the production of serotonin.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
So you start dating your bag of chips as opposed to your husband and looking for the same biochemical outcome.
Absolutely. Yes. Yes.
100%. So what can we do other than eating refined carbohydrates? Because diabetic partners are not necessarily what we're after.
Right.
To really optimize those pathways. Because, you know, I think there's an obvious question here, which is, well, other people can't make me happy. I have to make myself happy. So what can we do to prime those systems so that we protect against some of those behavioral events that inevitably happen where we're disappointed, but where we're not running to potato chips either.
I love that. I think that there's a couple ways that I want to answer this. So I'm going to start off with, if I can, rituals and rhythms, which will get us out of sort of lower brain, you know, mesencephalon kind of scarcity mindset and into more of the neocortex, into the areas where serotonin and dopamine live. So one of the things that I think is really, really, really important for both men and women to be practicing on a daily basis is the idea of gratitude. And I'm going to be like completely honest. When I first came across, you know, gratitude, and there was, you know, the 5-minute journal and some of these other gratitude journals that I was presented with, I was kind of like, this is kind of horseshit. Like, I don't really know what this is. It kind of makes you feel good. It's like airy fairy woo woo. But when I dug into it a little bit more, gratitude is really a neurophysiological event. So when there's you're either in, you know, fear, or there's sort of, you know, Oprah Winfrey, I remember she once said, there's only two emotions. You're either in fear or you're in love. And there's like many derivatives of that, right? Like fear is kind of like, you know, anger and hate and rage and, you know, disgust and jealousy, and, you know, love, it looks like joy and happiness and laughter and, you know, admiration, all compassion. You know, these are sort of derivatives of the very two basic emotions. And when you are practicing gratitude, you get out of fear, you get out of some of these lower primitive centers in the brain, and you get into the cortex, you get into those areas where serotonin and dopamine live. So one of the things that I, and I would love to share with your listeners if you want, is I've put together a spreadsheet that is an amalgamation of the 5-minute journal, the productivity planner, and then there's kind of a couple other things that we've hacked in there, like a 90-day plan, a 1-year plan, and a 5-year, you know, plan for our goals and stuff. But it's a Google spreadsheet, and we basically go in there every day, and I write gratitude for my, like, things that I'm gratitude for my, like, that I have gratitude for my partner, gratitude for other people in my life, and gratitude for the things in my life. And then it's a shared spreadsheet between my partner, Gio, and I, and then he will write the same thing. Like, there's kind of a cell for me and a cell for him to write the same things. And this is kind of a bit of a hack as well, kind of getting into those, like, as you were saying, reinforcing those serotonergic pathways in the brain, because then I get to see every day how he's grateful for me. So, you know, when he's writing gratitude for Stephanie, and he'll say, you know, I'm so glad she did X, Y, and Z yesterday, or did that, this and that today, I get to see that. And that's a way for me to get that positive feedback from my partner, which will help increase the serotonin and therefore drive the dopamine levels up. So gratitude is not just for, you know, people that live in, you know, San Diego. it's for everyone, and it really gets us. And that's
I'd be very grateful for that right about now.
I know. I'd be very grateful to be living in San Diego right now, too. That's true. Yeah, so it's a really great way to be able to get your neurophysiology out of your midbrain and into some of the higher levels of your cortex. So that would be the first thing that I would want everybody to be doing, whether that's with your partner or just for if you're not in a relationship and you don't want to be doing that, then just something for your own self-love and self-nourishing ritual and practice. The other things are really based on what we've already talked about, like having a really solid foundation in nutrition. I'm a big fan of eating more of what is called a ketogenic diet. So it's eating a diet that is higher in fat, which are really good. It's a really good source of energy for your brain. Your brain prefers ketones versus sugar. Because sugars, as you know, you're a doctor, you have a very good understanding of this, like the, you know, the highs and lows that happen when you're consuming sugar or those simple carbohydrates where you're, you know, trying to get the, that serotonergic burst. So more sustained fuel like fats, and then, you know, lots of green leafy vegetables, all those things for vitality for your cells and driving the, that normal metabolic cell, like metabolism at the cellular level. So your diet would be super important. And then I'm also, you know, fitness. I mean, working out either, you know, whether working out with your partner or if you're not in a relationship, trying to figure out how, you know, what the best exercise plan is for you. I'm a big fan of HIIT training, so high intensity interval training for more neurogenetic, more neurogenesis and kind of endurance stuff too for neuroplasticity.
I love these. And what I love about them in these hacks are that there's something that is easy for people to start to implement. I have a number of ideas that are coming off of this, but maybe just to follow up on the high intensity interval training. The one thing I hear from my patients over and over again is, oh yeah, like exercise. I would love to have time to exercise. What is HIIT and how much time do I need in my day or week to incorporate it?
Dude, HIIT is like you're done in 12 minutes.
Thank you. Listeners, did you hear that?
It's like you're done. And like when I say you're done, like you're done, done in 12 minutes. So, you know, and you don't need to have very specialized equipment. You don't need to have, you know, have a membership at a CrossFit, even though that would be amazing. But if that's not in the budget or if that's not in the, you know, the traveling to and from the gym, literally all you have to do is like burpees, like find a place in your home where you can do some jumping squats, some push-ups, and like you just punch out as many as you can in a minute. You take a 30-second break and you do it again and you do as many rounds as you can and you're pretty much finished at the end of 10 minutes.
Yeah, so there's no time to exercise excuse is, obsolete?
Yeah, it's really more about a belief. Like that's really when we kind of get back to mindset, that's really more about a behavior that is supporting a belief structure. If somebody says, I don't have time to work out, what I hear is that I don't think I'm worth it to make the time for 10 or 12 minutes to work out in my day.
Yes. And I also take that I don't have time, fill in the blank, for I don't have enough energy, which is a totally different trail down that clinical triage. With those people. But absolutely, you make time for things that are priorities. And sometimes we need to bump up the energy and the motivation to get there, right?
I totally agree. Yep.
I love this spreadsheet. I would love to be able to share it with our listeners. And as you were talking about it, I thought, oh, wouldn't it be cool if we did that and even had it on our chalkboard in our kitchen where our kids could participate?
Oh, I love in that. That is so good. That is good.
We are in flow. So
yeah, we are in flow. Yeah, that's awesome.
I know you were just so intentional when you work with your children, but you talk with your children. What kind of conversations do you have with your kids about their relationships with their friends, with their, like, what level of consciousness and conversation do you bring to that relationship?
This is a really, really big question. And I think, for me right now, where I focus with my kids is we actually do, you know, this is why I had such a strong reaction to the gratitude on the chalkboard. We do gratitude exercises every morning, every night. So in the morning, you know, they're just kind of waking up and I'm like, what are you grateful for? And I'm trying to, entrain them, if you will, to get used to looking for the things that they have versus looking for the things that they don't. Because I think as a child and, you know, the way that there's, you know, you sort of have these like parenting wars or that, you know, it's almost like a category in the, you know, in the Olympics, you know, there's like very, very competitive sports, right? I think it's important for our kids to be focusing on the things that they have. So I get answers like, I'm really grateful for loving you today, mommy. I'm really grateful that, you know, we got to snuggle for 5 minutes before getting out of bed, you know, and that's sort of some of the things that we do in the beginning of the day. And then the end of the day, you know, name three things that were really great about your day today. And that could be, I got to play gym, I went swimming, I did, you know, whatever it is. I mean, I have a 6 and a 4-year-old, so, you know, we're going to go at the level that, you know, they are able to kind of meet me at. So that's one of the things that we are working really hard on. In terms of relationships, you know, I have sort of become my mother. You know, when I was a young girl, I had like the broccoli and the asparagus and the tomatoes at school. And I was like kind of the weird, you know, child. And I was kind of made fun of at school because everyone was having like Doritos and stuff. And my kids are now seeing that too. Like they'll be like, mommy, someone had a Coke today in their lunch and Doritos in their lunch. And I told them that's not good for their brain. You know, what I'm trying to instill in my children is that it's okay to be different, and different doesn't mean that you're weird and different. That's just what it means. It means that you're different and that it's okay to be, you know, not to go with the sheeple, not to be, you know, not to necessarily be going with the crowd just because that's what the crowd is doing. So I'm trying to foster a sense of independence and pride, in terms of who they are, and also to be grateful for the things around them.
Yeah, I love that. We have a gratitude practice in our house as well. And I have to say, if you're not getting it immediately from your partner, you just ask your 4-year-old what they're grateful for, and your serotonin will just be flooding your system like nothing you've ever experienced before.
I agree. That's amazing.
I think we're both creating these really intentional experiences for our kids, and that is not necessarily everybody's experience of their childhood. And we had a conversation a long time about this in your office, but I would just love to introduce people to this concept of what does emotional stress or trauma do to the brain?
This is a really great question. So I'll just back up really quickly and say, you know, people sort of have an idea of what chiropractic is. And a lot of times when people come into my office, they'll come in with, you know, neck pain, back pain, headaches, that kind of thing. And that's fine. That's all fine and good. But what I often find is, you know, when someone has neck pain or back pain or headaches or whatever the case may be, shoulder pain, whatever, these are elements of physical misalignment. So there's something mechanical that may be going on in the spine or the muscular system or whatever. When somebody is emotionally misaligned, so in a job that they are not satisfied in or that's stressing them out, or in a relationship that's not satisfying them or that's stressing them out, they have the exact same presentation. So when you are emotionally stressed out, in the same way that when you are physically stressed out, what happens to the brain is that you move into what we call sympathetic dominance. Now, sympathetics, I know you've heard of this, Dr. Megan, some of your listeners, it's very commonly referred to as fight or flight. So back when we were tribal and nomadic, if there was like a, you know, woolly mammoth or a saber-toothed tiger or bear or whatever it is, your body has a certain response to seeing that stimulus. So your blood pressure goes up, your heart rate goes up, your cholesterol goes up, you know, your fear and anxiety goes up, your insulin sensitivity is downregulated, meaning that the blood sugar, your blood sugar will rise, your immune response decreases because, you know, when there's a bear in front of you, nobody cares about these, you know, small little, you know, bacterial infection that you may be dealing with. You know, your ability to learn and focus is decreased, your digestion tanks, your reproduction tanks, because these things are not important anymore when you're trying to get away from the bear. So that is the exact thing. So that is a physical presentation of that sympathetic dominance, that fight or flight. The exact same thing happens when you are in a relationship, a toxic relationship, or in a job that you hate, or an environment that you hate. So your brain goes into sympathetic dominance, and that means that you are constantly in a state of stress. And this releases a hormone called cortisol, which is very commonly known as a stress hormone. And there's this cortisol cascade that happens, and that, you know, prevents you from losing weight. It prevents you from sleeping properly. It can affect your digestion, your fertility, your immune system. So for me, when we are looking at patients, when we are looking at physical misalignment, we also want to really make sure that the environment that they're living in, where those genes are living in, you know, are healthy as well. Because I can, you know, I could be the best chiropractor in the city, but I'm only going to get so far if I'm only just looking at the physical presentation of the issue. There's also the emotional and the chemical aspects to health as well.
Yeah, and it's so interesting and three-dimensional. And I love having the opportunity to talk to different experts in different fields, and we kind of come to this common place. So we have an interview coming up in a few weeks with Dr. David Brady, and he's an expert on fibromyalgia. And during the interview, we kind of came to this this new syndrome that we coined called the anti-restoration syndrome. And it's like the end manifestation of people who just never honor the opportunity for their body to restore. How do you get people to restore? How do you get them to turn off that sympathetic nervous system? Sleep is certainly part of it, but what other tools do you give them that just get them to calm down?
We could be here for a long time. I would say that there's a lot of hacks that we can use for that. One, for sure, in sleep and ensuring when you are going to bed, like the last thing, you're not on Instagram and Facebook like 5 minutes before you go to sleep, right? That there is what I call an e-fast or an electronic fast, at least half an hour, but ideally an hour before you are going to sleep. So you give your eyes a break, and you know, we have these social, you know, when you're constantly on social media, I mean, you've seen reports of this, the more you're on social media, the more tendency, there's a higher tendency towards depression, because all you're seeing is this sort of, I don't know what the technical word for it is, but it's almost a fake existence. People are just showing you all the highlights. It's like the highlight reel of their life, and there's not a lot of authenticity there or vulnerability there. So I would say getting off of social media, making sure that you have a restful, sacred space for sleep. So that means that you have your phone is not charging in your room. I don't care if it's your alarm clock. Just buy an $8 alarm clock from somewhere else, and it charges in the living room downstairs or just away from your brain. There's no TV. There's it's black, and there's no electronics in your bedroom. This is a sacred space for restoration. The gratitude practice, I think this helps people slow down and really look at some of the really, it's always, you know, it's, if I get, let's say I get a review online, it's like, Dr. Stephanie is the best, she saved my life. And I have 99 reviews just like that. And I have one person that was like, you know what? It was expensive and I didn't really click with her. That's the one I'm going to focus on, right? So really, that's the tendency anyway. What I think is an important thing to cultivate is to learn to see where the joy is in your life. Learn to connect to your, and this is another, maybe my next point is connecting to your breath. I think when you are constantly not allowing yourself to heal, you are not connected to your body, and you're literally, you're all in your head and you're not connected to your body. So listening to the rhythms of your body, one of those things is the breath, the inhale and the exhale, and just trying to slow down a little bit. We are so, so busy. And I often, you know, it's almost like, this is like, how are you? I'm busy. You know, not, I'm fine. I'm great. I'm so happy to see you. How are you? I'm busy. You know, it's this new, isn't it? Like, don't you find that?
I'm laughing because now I actually start off my conversations with people saying, you know, besides being busy, how are things going? Because I just want to anchor outside of that. Like, I get it. I try to say full instead of busy, because full is choice. And to me, that's just like a gratitude lens. I mean, I could stop the busyness if I wanted to.
Right. Yeah. Right. And it also means that you're in control of your time. When you're so busy that you're like, oh my God, I'm so busy. Like, I can't see, I can only schedule, you know, 15 minutes, 2 weeks from Thursday, because in between, you know, soccer practice, you know. I think that when you are so busy, you've lost control of your life, and taking control back over your schedule and who makes it, I mean, this is your life and you got one of them. So really taking control over your schedule and defining when you are going to be engaged in something and when you're not, I think is one of the best ways that you can slow down and heal for sure.
Yeah. And there's so many ways to take control of your life, but it's scary for people. What do you do to conjure courage in your own life when you're about to take a step outside of that comfort zone? Because you're progressive in how you approach things. And I know you're really mindful and strategic about how you engage with the world and drive your business and all of those things.
I think allowing or giving myself space or the allowance of failing is probably one of the, you know, biggest gifts that I've given myself. So I am not attached. I sort of completely detach from the outcome. If I'm about to engage in something I've never done before, or it's sort of unknown territory, or, you know, what have you, it's okay for me to fail, because you either are going to win or you're going to learn. So if you fail at something, I think there's really valuable information in that. And I almost want, you know, kind of circling back to our kids, I remember reading, I think it was the, her name escapes me now, but she's the owner of Spanx. And her, I remember her talking about when she was at the table, when she was a little girl, and her father would be like, okay, how did you fail today? And really making the failure not such a thing to avoid, because, you know, to your point where you're like, people are so scared, it's very overwhelming. I think people are so afraid of failing because of the stigma that we attach to it. And it's okay to fail. I mean, welcome to the human race, right? It's fine to fail as long as you learn from it. If you continue to make the same mistake over and over and over again, then there's something that, there's a lesson there that you haven't learned yet. And it's sort of the universe's way, or energetically God, you know, Allah, whoever, whatever energy source you believe in, it's their way of bringing you back into learning that lesson that you have not yet done.
Yeah, what a great perspective, right? You're either going to win or you're going to learn. Now, of course, you have to move forward. Dr. Stephanie, how would you define health?
Defining health, I think, if I could put it pretty simply, I'd say that it is the ability to appropriately respond to your internal and external environment. So let me put that into a bit more usable words or usable format for you. When you are, you know, again, context of relationships or a job, you are in a job that you are not enjoying, or a relationship that is toxic to you, your ability to adapt to that external stimulus is going to really determine your longevity, your neuroplasticity over the course of your life. So are you going to internalize it and, you know, apply filters that are going to tell you, well, it's your fault that, you know, you're not advancing in the company, or it's your fault that your boss loses his shit on you, or whatever it is? Or are you going to say, okay, this is the problem, this is the template that I'm going to make to try and solve this puzzle, and let me try and move forward? So I think that would be my number one tip for sure.
Yeah, I love that. And it's sort of that notion of resilience in mind, body, and spirit. Each month, I'm featuring a new Anthropology quiz to help you unlock and uncover some of the physical performance blocks that may be holding you back from your true potential. With spring in the air, we are focusing on detox and toxicity. Through the quiz, we're going to help you understand whether you possibly have exposures you didn't even think you were having, and how to tell whether or not your body is better or worse than the average person at being able to remove these things from your immediate environment. To learn more or to take the quiz, head on over to MeganWalker.com/Anthropology quiz. The second half of the interview, we look at something that I call KPIs, or key performance indicators. And certainly in a startup, we have these key metrics that we need to look at to see whether or not we're moving forward in the direction that we want to go. And I think we have those in our life and in our health as well. And so I've got a series of sort of five quick questions that I would love to get a response from you about. And some of them we've kind of touched on, but we'll get a little bit more specific. So the first one is, do you have a consistent morning routine? And if so, can you share?
Yes, I do. Every day of the week, so Monday through Friday, I'm up at 4:30 in the morning. And that's, I just want to also just say, I've actually said this on another podcast before, and the girls are like, oh, it's one of those, you know, like, you know, here's your medal for waking up at 4:30. And that's just, that's not like a badge of honor for me. That's just the time that works. I have two young kids. They wake up at 6:00, so I have to get my shit done before 6:00. So
I understand that.
So I'm up at 4:30. And what I do is I sort of divide. So there's about an hour and a half that I give myself before my kids wake up. And that is divided into, like, the first thing I do is we do gratitude. I will do gratitude in my Excel spreadsheet that I was mentioning to you before. And then I will move. So just real quick, like neuro tip, 90% of the stimulation to your brain comes from your spine. So things where you are moving your body, like global movements where your spine is like moving in, you know, like things like yoga or on the, like I'm a big fan of the Rebounder, like those little mini trampolines. So I will do either a yoga in the morning or a Rebounder, or even it's a little early in the morning for me to do HIIT, but if that sort of serves you, then you can certainly take that. I tend to like to do more endurance type of work in the morning. And so I'll do that for however long, maybe 40 minutes or so. And then the last bit, like the last half hour or so, I will do personal development work. So that could be reading a book. That's my time to read. There's online courses that I'm always enrolled in. So, you know, doing a module and some of the homework that is associated with that online course, I'll do it at that point. And then that sort of readies me for the day. And then, you know, the other thing that I always do is, and this is kind of getting into diet, but I always make myself a bulletproof coffee after I'm done that. So I love the bulletproof coffee with the MCT oil and the grass-fed butter. So that would be what I do Monday through Friday. And Saturday, Sunday, I'm a bit more lax. It's, you know, I sleep in. My kids usually are in bed with me and they kind of crawl all over me and we kind of snuggle for a little bit. But then I'm usually, you know, out of the park chasing them, playing soccer or something. So I still get my cardio in the morning. It's just, you know, it's a different way.
This isn't a planned question, but I need to ask, what time are you going to bed?
Oh, I usually, for me to wake up at 4:30, I need to be in bed by about 9.
Okay. I wanted to put that out there because I didn't want my midnight bedtime goers to be like, all right, fine, I'll get up at 4:30.
Yeah, no, I also need my sleep. Like I find when I'm in bed at 9, the 4:30 wake up is like seamless. There's not a problem there.
Amazing. Fiction or nonfiction? What are you reading right now?
I am still combing through Tim Ferriss's Tools of Titans. I have read it through. It's one of those books where I find like I have to go back and revisit it. So is that considered fiction or nonfiction? Nonfiction, yeah. So I'm in Tools of Titans right now, full on like in the health section in the beginning.
Yeah, I know. I love it. I do one section a day and it's a great read. What do you do for fun or play?
Oh, such a good question. I like to dance. I literally will try to, currently right now, my kids are into The Lorax, which is, I know it's an older, Disney film, but I'm trying to learn all of the words to the song so we can like all belt them out together because I like to think that I'm on Broadway and I can sing with my kids. So singing and dancing, like I like to be goofy and, you know, just kind of let it all loose with my kids.
And my last question, entrepreneurism, are we born this way or do we learn to become entrepreneurs?
Ooh, that's a good question. Are we born this way or do we learn it? Oh, nature versus nurture. I'm going to go with a little bit of both. I think that you have to be an entrepreneur, you have to be resilient. You have to be driven. You have to be strategic and linear and also creative and passionate. So you really do have to use the left and the right side of your brain. And I think that also does come from experience. I mean, we're not born with the resiliency and the strategy. Like that comes from life events. So I'm going to cheat and kind of say both. I think both.
Both is a really safe answer. Dr. Stephanie, you have amazing things to say and share. Where can people find out more about what you're up to?
Awesome. Yeah. So the gratitude journal that I was talking to you about, you can find it at drstephanielovesyou.com. So you can download that. And if you want to learn a little bit more about me and what I'm doing, you can visit thehealthloft.ca. So www.thehealthloft.ca.
Fantastic. And we'll have all of those in our show notes for people to be able to access. Thanks so much for being with us today. What an incredibly insightful conversation we were able to have.
Thank you so much, Megan. It's been an honor. I love talking with you. It's been great.
If you enjoyed our conversation and would like to hear more, head on over to Stitcher or iTunes and subscribe to the Entrepology Podcast. We would also really appreciate a quick review. When people have their health, they can change the world. Let us keep you healthy and you go change the world.